FastAPI is a modern, fast, high-performance web framework for building APIs with Python based on standard Python type hints. Typer is a library for building command line interface applications, also based on Python type hints. Type hints and many other details are intended to make it easier to develop, test, and debug applications using FastAPI and Typer. The person behind both FastAPI and Typer is Sebastian Ramirez. Sebastian is on the show today, and we discuss both FastAPI and Typer and uses for both. Welcome to Test and Code. If you've found value in this podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go over to pythontest.com and look either in the top menu bar or in the bottom footer? And there's a few links we're going to talk about. Contact is how you can get a hold of me. Newsletter is how I can get a hold of you. And support is how you can find links to things like my book, the PyTest book, PyTest courses, the community where you can ask questions. And that's about it, really. I'd really appreciate if, especially if you could sign up for the newsletter. I'm trying to collect emails of people that might be interested in similar topics. Welcome to Test and Code. I'm really excited to have you here. You're Sebastian Ramirez. And can you tell us a little bit about you?
Yeah, sure. So first, thank you very much for having me here on the show. So yeah, I'm Sebastian Ramirez. I'm actually from Colombia, South America. That's why the accent. But I'm now living in Berlin, Germany. I'm working for Explosion, the company behind Spacy, the natural language processing toolkit. They are the creators of Spacy and Prodigy, the annotation package for machine learning using active learning, and Think, the deep learning library using type annotations with a functional style. So I'm working here in Berlin, and I'm the creator of FastAPI, which is this new, well, sort of newish, I guess, API framework. And Typer, which is the command line interface framework or library, I guess you could say. Yeah, that's me.
You've been working on FastAPI for a while, right? When did this start?
Yeah, so it was actually like FastAPI started in like 1 year and some months ago. It's actually like when you consider like all the other frameworks that are there, like this is quite young, I would say.
Yes.
But yeah, like it started when I was working at a company in Dubai, and like it was actually like a combination of ideas of all these new previous frameworks and tools that had like great ideas and great ways to work. But then I was just like trying to combine new tools and new possibilities to achieve the same things that I was trying to achieve, combining like a bunch of pieces together. Like that is not necessarily easy to combine a bunch of plugins and to make them work. And I was just trying to make it all work by default using standard Python type annotations so that you can just like write standard Python code and get like all the benefits of type annotations, like type checks and auto-completion and all this stuff. And then get for free data validation, data serialization, documentation, and all that just like by annotating your data so that when you add type annotations to the functions, and then when the function executes, you know that the data is already validated. And like you can just like dedicate yourself to the business logic of your application without having to do like all the custom logic for checking like, is this payload actually correct or not, and all the stuff. So that was like the idea that I was trying to achieve.
For FastAPI, the API in there is a REST API. So it's a endpoint or set of endpoints, right?
Yeah, exactly. So the thing is that like up to recently, most of these frameworks have had like the main idea of generating HTML in the backend and with using templates and this kind of things. And they have been like, they have invested a lot of work in these template engines and all these things. But then, like, many modern applications actually show the front end using a JavaScript library, and like a modern front end using something like React or Vue.js or Angular, or even like maybe the application is actually not a like the front end or the user interface is actually not even a web thing, but a mobile application, and the mobile application has to communicate with some backend servers. So with all this change or all this shift in development, the idea is to like these new applications end up communicating with the backend like a separate component, yeah, and like having just like this independent logic and independent responsibilities. So the idea with FastAPI is just to be able to easily build mainly JSON web APIs, but actually you can implement it and like do it with XML, I guess, if you want to, or like YAML or whatever of these systems that you want to implement. Of course, like the default is just JSON because that's like what most systems use. But yeah, like the idea is just to be able to do that and to do it all in a standard way using open standards like OpenAPI, JSON Schema, and OAuth2 for security.
And the fast part of it is it's high performance, right?
Yeah, the fast actually is double, like, yeah, it's high performance. So FastAPI is actually based on Starlet. And Starlet is built by Tom Christie, the same creator of Django REST framework. And Starlet is currently like one of the fastest Python frameworks as measured by independent benchmarks. And then FastAPI is actually just Starlet on steroids, and it just adds a bunch of stuff. And then it combines it with another library called Pydantic that does like data validation, serialization, and documentation based on standard Python type hints. So then FastAPI just combines these two things, and both of them are like up there in the top ranking for performance. Okay. So that's on the side of performance. Like it's one of the fastest frameworks available for Python. And on the other side, writing code in FastAPI is quite fast. Like having a product ready is quite fast. Like the amount of code that you have to write for the API itself is actually very little. Like most of the code that you end up writing is the business logic of your application. Like the API code is actually really, really small because it just gets out of the way and does the right thing for you. So yeah, the fast part is because it's like high performance, but on the other side, it's very quick to like have something already working when developing with FastAPI.
If you go to the FastAPI documentation, the key feature bullet points, there's only one that says like fast for performance. And there's a whole bunch of focus on fast to code, reduce the number of human errors that happen by minimizing the syntax that people have to use, making it easy. And just like it's not, there's not a lot of work to do to implement an API. The other end is you've also put a lot of thought into making sure that you can debug it easily. And so this whole comfort level for the developer experience is very refreshing. And I'm not surprised that it's getting a lot of attention and getting a lot of use, because I think that's probably because of all of that and that it's super fast.
Yeah.
I think it would have been popular in any way, even if it was just the same speed as everything else. So.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm glad like you like the dogs and like the thing. But yeah, like actually, the design of the like the API of the library and the way you interact with it, the design of it, like that was like a lot of work put just into the design of how it should look like and how it should feel like while developing with it. Because like one of the main ideas I wanted was to have autocompletion everywhere. So whenever you are coding with FastAPI, you get autocompletion for your own data, and you get autocompletion for the function parameters that you might pass to any of the functions that you use. Like there is nowhere that you have to use one of these KW arcs that that the function takes like some arbitrary number of keyword arguments, and that then you just have to go to documentation to find out what is it that will go there. Like, actually everything is declared and everything has types and everything. So you can just like use autocompletion for everything. The idea is that you should be able to give a quick pass to the documentation and then just like never come back. Just use autocompletion in your editor to know what is the thing that you have to pass in there for it to work.
Oh, that's great. I didn't notice that. That's an interesting touch. And then also, you're building off other people as well. Like Swagger's one. Is Swagger part of it, or incorporate it with it easily? Or
yeah. So the thing is that FastAPI, like even the design of the code itself is built around the open standard OpenAPI, which was previously known as Swagger. Like, it was Swagger 1, then Swagger 2.0, and then the next version was called OpenAPI 3.0.
Oh, I missed that.
But it's the same whole thing.
Okay.
And then after it became OpenAPI, it was transferred to the organization handling it is the Linux Foundation. Something like that, but still, like, it's a lot of the core development of that is done by the same guys that created Swagger.
Okay.
But then there is the user interface that can read that. So this OpenAPI is just like a big JSON or YAML file that describes how an API will look like and describes all the possible like endpoints or however you want to call them, and with all the possible parameters and all the bodies and like the payloads and everything, with all the data shapes and the data types of each one of those things. Then FastAPI is built around that, and it generates, like, the API that you create is automatically follows though that like specification, that standard, and then you get for free like the generation of the schema for that OpenAPI standard. So like you get like a whole huge schema describing your whole API. And then this same thing is consumed by Swagger UI, which is like the user interface that lets you explore interactively the documentation of your own API. And you can actually like execute requests to your own API using Swagger UI. Swagger UI is just like a JavaScript library that reads this JSON OpenAPI schema, and then it can interact with that API. But FastAPI bundles everything together, so you can just like create your API and then go to your API/docs, and then you get an interactive API documentation for free.
So I'm one of the things, since I'm not normally working on with REST APIs and stuff. That's not my day-to-day thing. I'm curious, where is this used? When do people use the Swagger UI? Is it during like a debugging or adding a feature, or is it just during like development, or like when is the normal time for people to use it? Do you know?
So yeah. So the funny thing with this is that once you have an interactive API exploration or documentation thing to work with your API, you end up using it like all the time, like during development to check that your API is actually working. So you don't have to wait for the front-end UI team, or maybe that's even yourself, to build something that communicates with that API to make sure that it works. Or maybe like try to make curl commands and make sure that you send the right payload and everything, because like you have examples already there in the automatic documentation. So the first benefit and the first user of this automatic user interface is like the same developer that is writing the API. I don't know, like having a postman very integrated into the API that already knows what are all the possible endpoints and what are all the possible payloads and what is valid and what not, and like just have it right there. Then the next kind of people that could benefit from it is other teams. For example, if you have a front-end team that needs to communicate with the API, without a system like this, the documentation of the API many times ends up in a wiki that ends up getting obsolete quite quickly, like after you have to add upgrades and migrate stuff and change stuff, and then they are struggling trying to communicate with the API that has like obsolete documentation in the wiki. So when they can just like use the documentation that is always up to date with the actual API, that helps a lot. And then the other one is when you are building an API like for your actual like final customers or clients to interact with, and they can explore the API there directly. That also helps a lot. Also because when you create the API and when you get this user interface, it also has like documentation, and you can integrate like actual like textual documentation and markdown documentation that is read from the doc strings of your functions. And it's all like done there like automatically. So you can document how to use your whole API and everything inside of the same code that handles it. So it's a lot easier to keep it up to date, because like if you update a parameter and you mention that parameter in the doc string of the same function that is receiving that parameter, that then like it's a lot easier to detect that you are changing something that is documented there if you need to have like some specific textual explanation of what is it doing.
So people leave these in place forever, right? You don't take them out at some point.
The documentation interface.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one option is just to leave it forever, and I will say like that's the simplest. Also because like some people consider it like that, like they will want to hide it for final users. I guess it's also like part of the idea of thinking that it will expose something that should be private or something like that. But actually, the security should not be done like by obscurity, by hiding where the endpoints, but actually by making sure that the data that is transferred is secure. And that's also like the same API, and the same thing can be integrated with OAuth 2, and there are like utilities to make it super easy. So you can get like an application that works very similar to like a GitHub or Twitter or Facebook or any of these things that say login with application X, or you can integrate one of those X applications like very easily, and then do the authentication not by hiding where are the possible endpoints, but like by doing like the security stuff on the API side. So yeah, like the simplest thing to do is just like have the API there, because like it's actually just like an extra feature for your API to have it like actually documented. But at the same time, there are some people that want to hide it and want to like make it only available for authenticated users or stuff like that, so they can use it with like an authentication cookie or things like that. But yeah, it's also like possible to hide it when people want to do that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's actually interesting. I hadn't thought of the notion of hiding it. And so if people didn't want it exposed to users, but they'll still need it for maintenance work or having it on a debug server or something like that. Right. So that's cool. Before we move on to Typer, I wanted to ask, do you know how widely used Fast API is yet? I know that's a hard thing to measure, but.
Yeah. I know it's a lot more used than I would have expected it to be. Like, I know there's like a huge use base, Not only like in, I don't know, in the USA, in Europe, also like in China, in Japan, in India, there's like a lot of users. Like I can see like, for example, just seeing like the Google Analytics for the documentation, you can see like there's always like, I don't know, 20, 40 people every second in the documentation. It's like just like a lot of people just using it. And I have seen like people migrating a lot of from a lot of frameworks to Fast API, and I know that it's currently used by Microsoft for Windows APIs and Netflix for their monitoring thing for Dispatcher. Uber uses it for the Ludwig machine learning system. So there's actually like a bunch of places that they are already using it, and like I think it's that's really cool. Like people are being able to adopt these new technologies a lot faster. Also, like I guess, because the benefits that these new ideas and these new technologies provide like justify adding new tools and like using them. So yeah, I guess that's driving a lot of the new users.
And are there new features coming into Fast API, or is it mostly in a maintenance mode, making sure that it stays compatible with everything in the future? What's the development model of Fast API right now?
So there's actually a bunch of stuff that is coming to Fast API, and there's a stuff coming to Starlet itself, Tom Christie and the whole team are building like a bunch of stuff into Starlet and improving stuff there that also is inherited by Fast API. And then Fast API also there's a bunch of things that are also going to be added. And even though there's a bunch of stuff that is going to be added and included, there's also already some backward compatibility layers to make sure that some older quote unquote applications made with Fast API don't break.
Yeah, they're only a year old at most, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's a bit weird to have compatibility layers and stuff in something that the version is still pre 1.0. And it's also, I don't know, why do we keep these versions pre-1.0 while the test coverage is at 100%, the whole code base is fully typed, annotated, and it's used in a lot of places. But yeah, I guess it's just to have this flexibility to update some of the interfaces and some of the ways that it can be handled and used to make sure that it has the best possible development experience.
Okay, yeah, you're still at 0.54, it looks like.
Yeah.
What's up with that? Why not go to 1?
I guess myself the same. No, but actually, I wanted to wait for Pydantic to be 1 point something, and Pydantic is already 1.5. Now I'm waiting for Starlet to be 1 point something to make sure that is also stable. It's just to make sure stuff is relatively stable before moving to a 1 point something. But if developers pin their versions and make sure that they have the code tested, then it should be fairly easy to upgrade to a new version.
Okay, and even if there's possible interaction, I mean realistically, it doesn't bother me at all. But the if Starlet changed the API for some reason, they probably are not, because a lot of people are using Starlet also. How much of the interface between Starlet and the end user of Fast API is, I don't know.
So the thing is that Starlet is a very lean toolkit and framework. And in some cases, it could be more a toolkit than a framework. It's very, very lean. It doesn't have hard requirements, and it has a very simple code base. It's actually a beautiful code base. Fast API just uses all that and adds all the stuff on top of it.
Okay.
Starlet is not very possible that it will change a lot of its own API, to change the way it works. It actually has changed the way the default style to declare path operations, to declare endpoints and stuff, that I call them in Fast API, I call them path operations, because it's a specific path with a specific HTTP operation or HTTP method. So just to keep it in line with the OpenAPI specification. In Fast API, everything is done through decorators. So you can do at app.get and then put the path there. In Starlet, the default is to use classes and declare classes inside of lists and stuff like that. More similar to how it works in Django, then Fast API will be more similar to how it works in Flask, I guess. But actually, that doesn't really affect how Fast API and Starlet interact with each other, because it's actually using the core stuff underneath for everything to work. On the other side, Tom Christie is like he's an awesome guy, and he knows that FastAPI is using it heavily, and that like the interaction is very strong with FastAPI and Starlet. I don't know, like even in some of the API changes, he has like asked me like, hey, will this affect or not? Or like, we make sure that everything keeps working?
Yeah, Tom's a really cool guy. I should have him on the show. I haven't had him on yet. But one of the other things I had wanted to ask is if somebody already has an existing application that they want to add an API, like, I mean, there is a API too. Does FastAPI work with other stuff? Can I hook like a Django app to a FastAPI, or is that just don't do that?
No, yeah, actually, recently I was using having a previous Django application and integrating that with a FastAPI application and like using the same Django ORM with FastAPI, which is kind of a weird trick. Like for a new project, it wouldn't probably make that much sense. But if you have like an already existing project, like FastAPI is made to be super modular and super independent of any ORM or any database or any of these like additional layers or components. So it's very easy to just like integrate it with other parts, or like even to add it as a layer on top of the existing API, just to add like new features through FastAPI in like some of the specific endpoints, let's say, and then keeping the rest in the already existing application.
Okay, I mean, there's a lot of applications out there that, and people that hold data that they're being requested. I mean, we're trying to get more and more open with data, right? So that people can expose an API instead of just publishing CSV files or something.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. And it will probably be like the simplest way to do it, I guess. But of course, I'm super biased.
Yeah, okay. So then Typer comes along. Typer's even newer. Were you in Berlin by then? But when you started working on Typer?
Yeah, Typer was actually like the Christmas. I went to freak mode during Christmas again. Like last Christmas, it was finishing up FastAPI. The previous Christmas, like this Christmas was finishing Typer. The idea with Typer is to provide like kind of the same development experience and the same design ideas to command line applications, to command line interfaces. So using standard Python type annotations, just to declare command line arguments and parameters, like an options and like declaring flags and everything, just with standard Python type annotations. And to get automatic data validation from the command line and automatic like type checks, auto-completion in your code, but at the same time, auto-completion in the final command line application. So that when your users use the command line application built with Typer, they can also get auto-completion in their own shell for the commands that you are creating with Typer. That's like the idea, to make it super easy to build and to have it like a very, to generate a very nice final command line application for the final users.
So one of my short list things of to do is to try to convert. I've got a couple applications that use Click that I want to convert to Typer, just because it's less syntax. There's less junk that I have to put on. I mean, Click is easy already, but there is some stuff in the API of Click that when you have it in your code, you look at it and you go, I don't really know what this is doing. It's just I have to have it to make it work. Nothing against Click. I mean, it's better than everything else I've tried before. It's so simple. You just stick these like decorators on top of a function and then you've got an API, like a command line interface. It's incredible.
Yeah. And I actually like, as someone pointed out, like, it wouldn't actually be migrating from Click. It will be just like adding a layer on top of Click, because Typer is actually a lean layer on top of Click, just doing adding the types stuff. but it's actually Qlik what powers everything underneath. The thing is that Qlik was designed and created like for Python 2.x. And then, like, we didn't even have types. We didn't have, like, a lot of the new things that we have now. So it didn't even have the possibility to use types for these things. But then, like, with Typer, the idea is, for example, in Qlik, when you want to add, like, a flag option, let's say, like, I don't know, dash dash verbose or something like that, you have to declare that in a decorator, and then you have to declare it again as a function parameter. And those two things are pretty far away in the code. Like, they're like maybe several lines away. And the thing is that when you update one of those, and when you update the name of one of those, you have to update the other one. And keeping that in sync without having something that makes them correlated, like, automatically in some way, that can make it a little bit more difficult. So that's one of the main ideas in Typer, is that you declare one of these parameters, so one of these names, you declare them only once, and then like everything is kept in sync together because you are just declaring it only once.
And then, I mean, building on top of Qlik is smart because the like the test on the back end, Qlik already had a test interface. Which was, it's very nice to be able to test your application. Does the testing part of Typer, is that just using the same Qlik testing interface, or is it something else?
Yeah, it uses like almost the same things. It's just that the Qlik one expects a Qlik application, the Typer one expects a Typer application. Because Typer doesn't really, the way that Qlik works is that when you decorate a function, it modifies the variable that you decorated to convert it to some specific type of object internal to Qlik. So then, like, when you create a function, it ends up not being a function, but being an instance of a command class, something like that. In Typer, Typer doesn't really modify the function at all. Then you get the Typer application independent of that. And when you call it, right when you call the function, that's when it generates a Qlik application. That's actually like a very technical detail, but yeah, like that's how it works underneath. Okay. So you actually use the code is actually kind of the same that will be for a Qlik for testing a Qlik application, but it's just that it takes care of making sure that you are using a Typer application and to convert all the things that need to be converted for it to work.
Yeah, but this focus on the comfort level of both the developer and the developer writing the tests. Hopefully it's the same person, but it might be a different person. This is really great, and I love it. The auto-completion part, where you're including these little stubs to be able to add auto-completion to the applications that people write using Typer. This is interesting, and why was this important to you?
So, like, I guess I don't have very good memory. So I have been relying on autocompletion for everything, for like the code I write and for the command line applications I write. I don't know. And when you use a command in the command line, and maybe if you are using like a new command, knowing where are all the possible parameters, it's like difficult. Like having to go to the documentation online and then going back to the command line and trying to check where are the possible parameters, where are the possible subcommands. That's not as comfortable as it could be when you can have like autocompletion in the command line itself. I really enjoyed working with command line applications that had this autocompletion feature for the shells that I was using, and I have been like moving through all the shells, Bash, Fish, and now C shell, and actually C shell, then Fish, and now back to C shell. So I wanted to be able to that these applications that are made with Typer that will work with any of these shells and that take care of making it work for those shells without the developer having to deal with all the details of each specific shell. And actually, like, they're super different between each shell, between PowerShell in Windows, Bash, C shell, and Fish. Like, all of them work very differently in the way they handle the completion. So having that by default was something that I was really wanted to achieve.
So your install completion bit will even deal with PowerShell?
Yes, so it will be, even deal with PowerShell, and there was a lot of struggle to make that actually work correctly.
That's incredible.
So that's cool. the first versions were using a click completion that did a lot of the work there. The recent versions of Typer use some parts and some of the ideas of click completion, but actually don't use click completion itself because several parts are re-implemented to work with recent versions of PowerShell that are not supported like in any other library that I know of.
So you said you use Z Shell the most?
Yeah, I'm using Z Shell the most.
Okay. So what happens if I write a little application and I run it with the install completion? What is it doing? Is it changing a dot file or something, or?
Yeah, so for the case of Bash and C Shell, it's generating another file inside of your environment in a specific place that will be read later, and it's modifying in the case of Bash, the .bashrc to read that file. It's not adding the completion part to the .bashrc directly, so that you can just remove that line if you want to uninstall the completion.
Okay.
Or remove the file that is generated. And for C Shell, it's the same. For Fish, it's generating a file in another place for Fish functions that then Fish will read automatically and call it whenever you are triggering auto-completion for that program. And for PowerShell, is generating a file. It's similar to a .bashrc, but for PowerShell, it cannot read it from an external source because PowerShell doesn't have a way to do that. But then it just adds the necessary configurations to have it in PowerShell. And actually, in the latest version, it's possible to have an application that is installed inside of a virtual environment, then install auto-completion, and then have the auto-completion work when you are in the environment, even if the application is not installed outside of the environment. The trick here is that when you start a new session in your shell, all the auto-completions are set up. But then if the command is not already available, then it cannot call that command to generate the completion. But the latest version is made in a way that will delay that call to the command until the command is available, even if it's inside of a virtual environment.
Oh, wow. Okay. Neat. Well, what's one of the things that I think is awesome about this is because, yeah, I love it when tools provide completion and stuff, but I don't know how to do it. And a lot of people, a lot of command line tools are written not for a massive number of people. They're written for a handful of people in a developer group or something, or it's a tool for a company or something. I can't justify figuring out how to do completion for a little tool like that, except for if I just have to design it with Typer and I get that for free, then of course I'm going to have that included. And it's pretty cool. I like it.
Yeah, exactly. And specifically for many of these use cases where it's just a small script, it's just a small application that maybe doesn't even justify building a whole Python package and installing it for it to work. When you just have a small tasks.py script inside of the project. For these cases, I built a Typer CLI, one thing is Typer, the library, and this one is an independent package called Typer CLI that you can install, and then it will read the file that you are providing it that has uses Typer, and then it will provide you autocompletion for that script directly in the command line without you even having to install anything in it. And because the way Typer works, you can even create a standard file with just a main function and declare some parameters with some types that you can say this should be a path and this should be an integer and this should be a string, and then call that with Typer, and Typer will convert that into a command line application with autocompletion and everything just from your simple script.
Okay, I gotta check that out.
For this specific projects and for having like some script that is just very tightly attached to a project that doesn't justify like creating a whole package just for that script, these other two actually works quite well.
Okay. Now, I warned you about this before you came on. You have an awesome mustache. I would probably call it a handlebar, but I don't know if that's the right term. But is there a story here? How long have you had this?
So the mustache has been there for several years. I think it's been there for 7 or 8 years, something like that.
Okay.
And the story is actually quite simple. It's just that my grandfather, that is quite a character, decided to grow a mustache like this. And he just went with it, just decided to do it because he could. And then I say okay, let's just follow along and do the same. I think when he started thinking, he started painting and drawing, he said I want to have a mustache because I'm a painter now. And it was after he was 60 or 70, I don't remember. And he said I'm just going to do that. So then I just copied this style.
Oh, that's awesome. Homage to your grandfather. So was he in Colombia then?
So my grandfather is quite a particular person. He's in Colombia, and he was a cyclist when he was young. And he came, he went to the first Tour de France, the first Colombian team to go to the Tour de France from Colombia. And then he decided to retire and just have a farm and then have animals. And then lately he decided to be a painter. So yeah, he's been doing whatever he wants, I think.
Is he still around then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's still around.
Do you get to visit Colombia very often?
Yeah, not that much recently with coronavirus and stuff. But yeah, from time to time I get to go there and visit.
Nice.
Everyone.
Okay. And you're I think we covered this already, but you're in Berlin now?
Yeah, I'm currently living in Berlin and working with Explosion.
Okay. And I've never been to Berlin. I want to do that sometime once we get the travel things settled out. But
it's a very nice city. Make sure to come and let me know so we can have a coffee around.
Thanks so much. I want to thank you for coming on the show, but also for all your work on Fast API and Typer.
Yeah. So. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me. It's a great pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Testing Code. Let's keep in touch. Head over to pythontest.com/contact to reach out to me, or /newsletter so that I can reach you, or /support if you'd like to, get a course or something. That's all for now. Now go out and test something.